Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show. Tonight's episode of the CF Radio Show is presented by our friends at AgriGold. They are our presenting sponsor of CFTV Live every week, and they do a lot for us here at CycloneFanatic.com, and they do a lot for the farmers in the state of Iowa. Full disclosure, Jeff Woody and I are not at Whiskey River in Ankeny tonight.
Not currently.
We are at the Cyclone Fanatic offices as we await Iowa State's game against Iowa tonight. What's up, Jeffrey?
I made sure as I was pulling out my clothes that most of the time, since I work at North Ankeny CrossFit, I normally wear some North Ankeny CrossFit apparel. But I decided that I went all Iowa State clothes today just because I have to. I have to. It's a kind of an obligation, right?
Iowa State Day,
you have to, no matter what, no matter where you work, you have to wear like if you're an attorney, like you got to wear like a red tie. Like, isn't it some part of like the necessity of Iowa State Day in anything?
I would say so. I mean, I don't see any reason why not to. I don't have any Iowa State stuff on, but I also have to cover the game.
It's a little unprofessional when you go to a game.
I put on a Cyclone Fanatic polo this morning, and then I realized there was a stain on it, and it was not clean.
Gosh darn it.
We'll talk a little bit more about the game a little bit later on, almost right before tip-off. But first, Iowa State's going to Memphis.
They are going to Memphis.
You went to Memphis?
I did go to Memphis, 2012.
How was that?
It was – every single bowl trip is really fun.
Yeah.
I will say this. We went to three different bowls. Bowl number one was in Phoenix. We went to the Insight Bowl. That was the most fun. And not because we won, because I didn't actually play in the game. Mm-hmm. But that makes it better. But it just Phoenix was really cool. Then I went to New York in 2011 for the Pinstripe Bowl. And then we went to Memphis and the Liberty Bowl the year after that. And of all three bowls, this was the least fun. But again, that's like saying, I'm gonna give you $100, $80, or $75. Like, if someone gives you that, like, it's still a really good thing. It's just slightly less good than the other ones. And really, I think the only reason that it was that way is because the weather in Memphis at the end of December is not exactly the most fun thing of all time. It's like 45 and raining when we were there. And it snowed the first day down there. It was hilarious because people in Tennessee have no idea how to handle snow. So it's sort of like when you see like someone getting a peppering of snow in like South Carolina and they shut down everything.
It's sort
of the same way. There was like an inch and a half of snow.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen this year.
No, I would think that's an anomaly of those things. But long story short is Memphis, it was a really cool place to go. And I think these guys will be excited to get there because I don't think in 2012, that would have been my junior year, none of these guys were on the roster when we last went down there. I don't think any of these guys have been to a bowl trip. And so this is their first experience with having that opportunity.
I would imagine that it's a little bit different for the players than it is for the fans as well. Like the players probably aren't going to go to Beale Street or anything like that.
You might be surprised.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. But they're probably not going to be on Beale Street as much as
they will not be on
be.
Beale Street near as much as the fans will. Yeah. Not remotely close as much as the fans will.
Are
especially
you
because
go?
How many seats has Pollard said?
15. They sold their whole allotment today.
15,000, and it was announced
announced that this morning.
It was announced, 4 days ago?
Yeah.
And it was – they're already sold out in four days.
The whole stadium, I think, is sold out already.
And, because Memphis is right there.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going because I'm trying to get Chris to pay for me to go.
Okay.
And if Chris isn't paying for me to go, then I can't really foot the bill to go. But it would be a fun trip. But no, I will not be going unless it's on Cyclone Fanatic's dime. So if anyone's around and sees Chris in San Diego, I'm gonna nudge him a little bit. Hey, you should get Jeff to go down there. I'll do podcast after podcast if I'm down there.
There's no way that he'll listen to this either, so he won't even know that when people keep coming up to him and saying, "Hey, you should let Jeff Woody go to the bowl game." He'll never know that you told everybody to say that.
He needs to. So do that. Text him. Just tell Chris to pay for me to go to the bowl game. I will do whatever content needs to be done down there.
And I think that this. I mean, on the side of the game, I think that it is going to be one of the more entertaining bowl games of the bowl season.
I think so too. And I also think it stacks up relatively well for Iowa State as far as bowl opponents go.
Yeah.
Because they're going to not have to completely reinvent themselves. They'll be able to do what they do, and they're going to be able to practice kind of their own fundamentals and apply the sort of John Wooden approach, where I remember I didn't read his book. It's one of those on my list of things. But one of the things that I do remember he said is that they didn't ever practice against an opponent. They just practiced their own stuff. And then when they got to their opponent, they were just really good at what they did. And that's what Iowa State's going to be able to do, because Memphis plays that very down the field, very aggressive offense, mm-hmm. which Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Baylor, they've played that this year. So they're not going to have to reinvent themselves, sort of like what they had to do for Kansas State, because Kansas State runs a completely different style, or Iowa runs a completely different style than what that is. So they'll be comfortable in their three down drop eight or three down eight deep kind of set and be able to fully go. And Dave Montgomery will be healthy, so you'll actually still be able to have a fully developed running game. And Kyle Kemp, one would think, would have a pretty good handle back on whatever's going on with him. It should at least be better.
I think
better.
He said he should be 100%.
Yeah, it should be better by the time he gets there. So You'll have a full allotment of your guys, and your defensive scheme is going to be relatively simple, because what is Memphis in the top 5-6 in offense, total offense in the NCAA?
I think that them and UCF were 1-2 scoring offense going into that championship game. And, so, I would imagine they're still probably 1-2 after the championship
62
game.
To 55 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a good draw for Iowa State, except the one downside is that it is a road game. I mean, it's almost a true road game. You're playing Memphis in the stadium that Memphis plays at. So technically speaking, it's a neutral site, but by all intents and purposes, it is a Memphis home game. And so that is a little bit of a disadvantage where you're going to have, I mean, it's not going to be 50-50 crowds like you're going to get neutral sites, or 60-40 because Iowa State travels really well. It's going to be more like 60-40 Memphis to Iowa State. It'll still be better than a road crowd, because Iowa State's generally not going to take 15,000 to a road game. But it's still not going to be, you know, a true neutral site or a Cyclone advantage like all three bowls that we played were.
I would say that if for this bowl game, outside of if they would have gotten like a name brand SEC team, this is probably the best case scenario that they could have gotten, wouldn't you think?
For whom they're playing or where they're playing?
No, for who they're playing, yeah.
It's a top 25 opponent.
Because I mean, it's a lot different to say we're going to play Memphis, number 20 team in the country, than it is to say, oh, we're going to go play Tulsa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. It is. It's a ranked opponent, and I think people, because of that, they're in that conference championship game, it does make a little bit more of a statement.
Yeah.
Competitive me, would have loved to play in an LSU or something like that. That is kind of a name brand.
Yeah.
Because we beat LSU in whatever bowl game, or we beat Notre Dame in whatever bowl game. It has a lot of cachet to it. A bowl win's a bowl win. And being able to play, this far, and we can get into this in the next segment more. But the biggest part of being in a bowl game is that you get these practices. So the practice is between last game of the season and the bowl game. Those practices are huge, and I'm assuming Coach Campbell is setting up similar-ish to how Coach Rhodes had set it up. But regardless, you're getting to a bowl game, you're getting to play a top 20 opponent, and you're getting all these practices, and the guys, really, it's like a paid vacation that you play a game at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's a super fun trip. I mean, there's nothing bad about it at all. There's just little things that you wish would have been a little, you know, playing a Big Ten or an SEC or Pac-12 opponent rather than a mid-major, a group of six. But regardless, everything about this is good for Iowa State.
Just kind of going back, I mean, it's been a while since I talked to you. We haven't done CFTV in 2 weeks now.
Yeah, we didn't.
But that Kansas State game.
Hey, so this was fun. I've done two call-in shows in my life.
Yeah.
Two Cyclone reaction shows for Learfield in my life. The first one was the last time Iowa State played Kansas State in Manhattan, when they blew a 19-point lead in the final minute and 40 seconds.
Yeah.
That was the first time I did a call-in show. It was Heather Burnside and I. It was Heather's first time doing it, and it was my first time doing it. And so, great. That was a blast. Then Chris says, hey, I've got to call the men's basketball game that night. I'm not going to be able to do it. And because of that scheduling conflict, Jack Whitver said that he was going to be in Manhattan for the game because he didn't think there was actually going to be a show because they would overlap. Well, it turns out there's going to be a show. Jack's going to be out of town. Chris is going to be calling the basketball game. Next fill-in is me. So I was scheduled to do the call-in show that night by myself. And I'm thinking...
By yourself?
By myself. And I'm thinking like, all right, this is going to be all right. This is going to be... We're going to do things okay. And Iowa State had the chance to put the nail in the coffin and the flag gets waved off. And... Zach Spears, who I've talked with, so Spears, Arnaud, and A-Rob and I have a group chat, and Spears instantly sends a text, and he goes, Kansas State's going to win 21-19. I've seen this show before. And I'm like, nah, man, they're going to be all right. All of a sudden, they drive down, they score with 0 seconds left, and I'm like, how in the world do I get stuck with the two most heartbreaking losses in recent Iowa State memory for my only two call-in shows ever? So that was fun. Just to let you know, that was what my experience on that game day was.
I don't know. Since I've been covering the team, I don't think there's been more outrage, like on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Than of those two games.
Yeah.
I mean, people were pissed after that game, and I was pissed, dude.
I think justifiably so.
Yeah. I mean, I was walking down. I mean, Rob and I are sitting there, and they come together to talk about that last pass interference call. And I'm like, there's no way that they can do this again. There's no way.
Yeah.
And
oh, guess what?
Oh, they do. And they do. And I leaned back in my chair. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me, dude. Like, this is not good. And you just knew right then what was probably gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was, my thinking on this was, there is still so many things that you can control in this game. And the officials... It was a really excessively poorly officiated game.
Mm-hmm. From start to finish.
First touchdown score, there was an obvious false start in a wide receiver,
yeah.
And they let the play go, and the play runs right behind where he was. They missed another false start later in the game. No one's going to be perfect, and I don't think this was a fix. It was just someone being really bad at their job.
Yeah.
And the flip side of this is that no matter how bad it was, I think I wrote the same column for the Register the week after, is like, it was terrible, but on that 2nd and 6, it was the first down run by Sheldon Crony, which got 4 yards, and then 2nd and 6, they elect to throw, which is a ballsy move, but still one that you can understand. I didn't agree with it. I didn't like it. I wouldn't have done it myself, but I get it. And
if it works, Tom Manning's a genius.
Right. And so they throw an out route to Hakeem Butler because it's a risky throw, but it's a safe throw at the same time, where most, especially with Kyle Kemp, he's going to miss that thing wide. So it's not going to be a turnover.
Yeah.
It's going to be either a completion or it's going to be an incompletion. It's good option, bad option. There is not really a worse option. And so it's tightly contested, but it hits Butler in the hands.
Yeah.
And it was a hard catch, but it should have been a catch. And at that point, it becomes 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 1/2 yard. And then the clock would still be running. So Kansas State has to burn their second timeout. Then all of a sudden you run a second down play and say successful option is you get the first down, game's over. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Say unsuccessful option is they run the ball and it's 4th down. Then Kansas State's going to have to burn their last timeout, which then you're putting a redshirt freshman quarterback with no timeouts in about 1:30. Once the ball gets punted, that's a bad situation. That means everything has to go to the outside. The three big plays that got them down the field were crossing patterns because Iowa State was trying to play the sideline routes.
Yeah.
And so the big plays that happened is when Thompson stayed in the pocket, threw everything over the middle. So the whole domino chain starts by catching the ball on 2nd down. And so it's bad. They're awful calls by their officials. Absolutely. 1,000% bad, terrible calls by the officials. There are bad no calls by the officials. But in the same light is you can control, despite all these things,
yeah.
You can control what happens. And so it was really frustrating. And I think Cyclone fans have an absolute right to be pissed, or had a right to be pissed, and not to rehash a bad memory. But I think there are still things that you catch that second down pass, or even on the defensive series, is you don't let the quarterback scramble to his right. He's a young guy. He hasn't really worked scrambling to his left a whole bunch. He scrambled to his right 2 or 3 plays in a row because I think it was JD on one of them and 19 on the other. And so I think it was they had gotten low. And we've talked about this before on CFTV, is on a 3-down rush, you're going to be low on one side.
Right.
There is an out route that they're going to be able to, whether it's straight up the field or whether it's booting to one side, they got low on his throwing side, and they let him scramble comfortably. They had one play where he scrambled to his uncomfortable arm, and he throws there's an open receiver running down the sideline. He throws it 7 yards off the sideline. So, again, really bad to sum up the entire thing that we missed in the 2 weeks we haven't talked is horrible officiating and a terrible circumstance, but you still have multiple opportunities to win that game despite all of that.
I think the thing that was just so frustrating about it to me was that when they pick up that flag on the what should have been defensive pass interference, is it just changed the complexion of the last whatever minute and a half, you know? Because if he catches the ball, obviously the game is over.
Right.
If they throw the flag, the game is essentially over in that situation. Mm-hmm. But when they don't pick up the flag, I mean, it changed the whole way that the last minute and a half of the game played out. So that's what made me mad, I guess, is that it was like the refs took that play into their own hands, mm-hmm. and then that one play was a domino effect that, you know, kind of killed the whole rest of the game.
And
I know, I get what you're saying, but I think that's just what it was in the moment that was so frustrating about it to me, is that it felt like they took control of the game rather than letting the players take control of the game.
Yeah, and again, you can't take the officials out of the game completely, but if the ball were to have been run on third or second and third down, even with Sheldon Crony instead of Dave Montgomery, which Crony's a pretty darn good back himself.
Mm-hmm. He was impressive.
He was.
He was really good.
And so even with Crony instead of Montgomery, you still run the ball in second and six. You'd think you get, say, two or three.
Yeah.
That puts it in third and three, which at that point you have a viable play-action route that if you wanted to, if you had to throw it, or you run it and force them to burn another timeout. Again, all that stuff could have happened, but it didn't. And now you got to deal with it. And again, if dealing with it means a 7-5 season where you win five games inside the Big 12 conference and you get to play a ranked team in a bowl game, I think we can deal with that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. We'll talk more about Iowa State's bowl draw and some more about Iowa State football when we come back. You're listening to the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show presented by AgriGold on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. Welcome back to the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show presented by AgriGold here on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. Jeff Woody, Jared Stansberry, not at Whiskey River in Ankeny tonight. We are pre-recording the show.
You're spoiling the magic of radio.
At this very moment, I should be on my way to Ames, or at least getting pretty close to Hilton Coliseum for the Cyhawk basketball game, where I will be with Kay Fitzy. He's covering his first Iowa State basketball game tonight.
Kfitz?
Yeah, Kfitz, yeah. I'll actually say, too, that we're having a contest on the Cyclone Fanatic forums, a bowl pick'em. Fitzy is giving his last Cyclone Fanatic check to the bowl pick'em. So whoever wins will get the $100 that Fitzy would have made last month off of the Stans and Fitz podcast and his various writings.
Which is neat.
Yeah.
That's
nice
of him.
A very nice thing of him to do. Do you want to throw your check into the pool too?
Not a chance.
Yeah, I figured that'd probably
not
be
a chance.
You're a very greedy SOB.
I would say greedy is not the right word. I would say stingy is more of the proper term. As I said, we spent like 5 minutes in the first segment trying to convince Williams to pay for my bowl trip.
That's fair.
Which still, call, text, email, tag Chris Williams, at Chris M. Williams
on
Twitter.
There you go.
Tell him to pay for my bowl trip. But
don't mention that Jeff told you to
pay. Don't mention that I said to do it. Just to at him, be like, hey, you know what would be a really good idea is if you paid Jeff to go down there. Like, that would be a really good idea.
This is a foolproof plan. I don't see any way that this can go wrong.
No way. No, this is going to happen. I should probably just book a hotel and just put it on Cyclone Fanatic.
Might as well. Today, on Thursday, Sports Illustrated announced their All-American teams. Joel Lanning named a second-team All-American as an all-purpose player. And I was telling you in between our recordings that being an all-purpose player on an All-American team is like, yeah, that guy's a football guy. That's all. They should just say football guy, All-American.
What it reminds me of is, you know, in like All-State rankings when they like have two really good quarterbacks and they're like both like, you know, one's going to, you know, Ohio State and one's going to Minnesota or something, like some really high ranked two guys, and they can't put them at one position, so they make one of them first team All-State punter.
Yeah.
Like that's what that seems like to me. It's like, this guy is really good at football, but we don't have a spot for him. How about all purpose?
Yeah.
Let's go football guy. You are good at playing the football. So you are the football guy. He's just guys being dudes.
I didn't even look at the list. I didn't see like what other kind of guys are on the, like that are all purpose. I don't even know of many teams that would do an all purpose, you know,
who would constitute an all purpose.
Yeah. Like how many times do you be like, yeah, we don't really know what position this guy should be, so we're just going to put him here. Like, would Jabril Peppers have been an all-purpose guy?
I feel
guy?
Like Jabril Peppers would have been an all-purpose guy. Christian McCaffrey would have also been an all-purpose guy. He didn't play defense.
But he was a good running back, too. So it's just, he was probably could have just been running back.
That's true.
See, it was okay, here's a question. Is Saquon Barkley all purpose?
Okay. Okay. Let's take this fire that you tried to throw on the gasoline. Let's just kick it away from it. Do I feel like Joel should have won the Horning Award? Let's go there. However, Saquon Barkley absolutely deserves it. He has actually more touchdown passes than Joel this year.
How many tackles does he have?
It's true. He doesn't have as many tackles. But from a versatility standpoint.
How many interceptions does he have?
It's, again.
Fumble recoveries.
I get it. And he absolutely should have won it. I think Joel's the most versatile player in the country. I mean, he led the team in tackles. He was in top five in, I believe, the following categories of interceptions.
Sacks.
TFLs. Touchdown passes and rushing touchdowns. Was in the top five in all those categories.
And rushing yards.
And so you can't really say that Barkley deserves it more. However, I feel like Barkley would constitute an all-purpose guy because he was a kick returner. He led the team in receptions.
This is what I don't need from you. I don't need logic. I don't need any of this. I want to be pissed about it.
You're talking to the guy who, again, was like Joel got trotted out in front of the media every single game this year. That was me. We've talked about this before.
But it was different,
though. The guy who got trotted out. That was because we got our asses whooped in half of the games my senior year.
It was different, though, because you could play five plays, and you were still going to be out there talking to the media. Joel played on every play,
on every single snap.
Right. So that's a little bit different. I mean, I see what you're trying to do with your comparison, but I want to make that clear.
Platitudes of getting everything neutralized to be political. I do think I am actually a huge Saquon Barkley fan, which is also true.
I mean, I think
the dude's super.
See, and I kind of went off on this on our Tuesday podcast that he should most definitely have been invited to New York for the Heisman ceremony.
Yes.
And it is ridiculous that he wasn't. And I understand. I mean, I do. He deserves the Horning Award. I'll admit that. Because at the same time, he probably won't win any other awards. He was one of the best running
backs. Bryce Love's going to win.
Right. He'll win the Doak Walker. And Baker Mayfield will win every
offensive
award. Offensive, outstanding player award. So, I'm glad that he won an award because Saquon Barkley is phenomenal. And it would have been really terrible if he would have left college football without ever winning a major award. But I'm pissed because I think that it's bad that now Joel Lanning leaves college football without ever winning a major award.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And there is no – I think it's also kind of a crock that they didn't release the voting.
Yeah. See, and that's – I tweeted that. I was like, see, you're asking for it. If you're not going to release the voting, you're not going to, put the ballots out there. There's an East Coast bias here. I guarantee it. East Coast bias.
You're talking to a fan base who is – absolutely hot on the conspiracy trail against Iowa State, and now you're not releasing the votes.
Yeah.
That's a bad look.
We're still mad that Troy Davis didn't win the Heisman 21 years later.
In 1996.
Yeah. Hey, and Randy Moss said yesterday he should have won.
That's true. He should have.
Randy Moss knows.
I mean, it's not the 1 year, 2,000 yards rushing, but that's super impressive. 1 year, 2,000 yards rushing.
Bryce
Love almost did that. Donnell Pumphrey at San Diego State did that. Deontay Foreman last year did it at 2,000 yards rushing. But do it 2 years in a row.
On teams that won five games in 2 years.
And I feel like that's a large – you have to take – granted, each year is its own little special egg, but you have to take at least some of that in a row. We are arguing about something that happened 21 years ago.
We don't have to talk about Troy Davis, but this can kind of come back to Saquon Barkley that I think his name's Mike DeCourcy. He writes for the Sporting News and he's on Big Ten Network a little bit.
Okay.
I think that's his name. I hope he isn't listening if that's not what his name is, but he wrote about how the Heisman has just become a joke. And it's all because of the Heisman tracker every week, where these guys, when you win a game, Baker Mayfield beats Ohio State, has a good game. All of a sudden, Baker Mayfield's the Heisman front runner. Saquon Barkley goes off against Iowa. They win the game. Oh, now Saquon Barkley is. But then they lose to Ohio State. Okay, no, he drops back. And it's the way that it goes every single week. We're picking a new Heisman winner that all of a sudden you can't look at the whole big picture of it to where, in the past it was possible for a receiver to win the Heisman.
Right.
It's not now.
Yeah.
Really. You know,
it's got to be either quarterback
If Larry Fitzgerald can't win it, or Michael Crabtree can't win it, then nobody's going to win it, honestly. And so, or Randy Moss can't win it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just it. The whole award has become a joke because all we focus on is quarterbacks and running backs. Well, quarterbacks have won like what, like 19 to 20 or something like that.
And the game has also transitioned to being a much more passing oriented game.
Yeah.
And the quarterbacks that are successful, the teams that are successful, are those that distribute the ball evenly. You look at a guy like Lamar Jackson, or even when Jameis Winston won his, and Jameis Winston, I think, is a turd of a human being. I think that's fair to say. Yeah. So that we can get to that in a second. But when he had, it was Kelvin Benjamin, right? He had Kelvin Benjamin at Florida State, I believe.
Yeah, before Kelvin Benjamin got fat.
And so it's Kelvin Benjamin at Florida State, and he would just a lot of times just heave it up to Kelvin Benjamin in the end zone. But he still had 3,500 yards in the season.
He also played some pretty bad teams, too.
True, but he spread the ball. I don't think he should have won it, but if you look at using that as the note, the receiver, or at Texas A&M, like Mike Evans was a freak for Johnny Manziel, but he also wasn't the only freak. I mean, that offense was driven by the quarterback. It wasn't driven by the wide receiver, where times like, you mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. Like, Larry Fitzgerald was the driver for that offense. It was just get it somewhere near him, and he's going to be the thing that does it.
And Jason White beat him.
Right. Yeah. Which is, again, a quarterback is going to be driving the offense because you're going to complete passes to 8 different dudes in a game.
Right.
Because that's what good quarterbacks do. And that's why Baker is so much of a different dude. He's head and shoulders above everybody else because that offense, there is nothing you can do to stop that guy.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that is, it's not take the guy away from the team, that how you win the Heisman. It's what can you do to stop him?
Yeah.
And if the answer is nothing, then they're worthy of the Heisman. Which is why I thought Mariota, because he was a runner-up and then he won it the next year.
Yeah.
I think he was a runner-up to Winston. I thought Mariota was much more deserving of the Heisman than Winston, because you had a way to stop Jameis Winston. Is you got pressure on him, you hit him, and you played
enough. Ironically, Oregon ended up being the team to prove that.
Right. And so you get pressure on him, and you hit him, and you force him to unsteady his feet.
Yeah.
There, in college, there was nothing you could do to Marcus Mariota to throw him off his game. Nothing.
Well,
and same thing with Baker. There's not a thing you can do against him. And that's why I think quarterbacks and running backs have a much bigger ability for that, because a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, again, is one of the best wide receivers that has ever existed in the history of football, is you can play double or triple coverage and force them to beat you somewhere else. You can take a guy out of the game. You can't do that with really good quarterbacks and really good running backs. Example, Troy Davis. There was 9.5 guys in the box. Like, they played man coverage on the wide receivers, and everyone else was like, just tackle the guy that they're going to hand the ball to 37 times this game, tackle him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the main thing they're trying to do, and there's nothing you could do to stop Troy Davis. There's nothing you could do to stop, Derrick Henry when he's at Alabama. There's nothing you could do to stop Christian McCaffrey. There wasn't one thing that you could do. So that, in my mind, is the definition of the Heisman vote. Is what can you do to stop that guy?
And that's why there's been years where I think that you have a legitimate conversation about who should have won this. I think that you think about 2009.
With Ndamukong Suh?
Ndamukong Suh and Toby Gerhart was in there.
And Mark Ingram
is the one who ended up winning.
Yeah.
And I think that anybody that watched college football that year, I mean, Ndamukong Suh won more individual awards for that season than any guy in college football history has. I think he won 10 different ones.
Yeah.
And it's like anybody that watched him play football knew that he was the most dominant player in college
and
football.
And I thought that he should have won the Heisman.
Yeah.
I mean, being a white tailback, I was kind of rooting for Toby Gerhart.
But, I think Toby Gerhart was similar in that way that you knew he was going to get the ball all the time because they didn't have hardly anything else. Andrew Luck, I think, was a freshman.
Yeah.
And he still ran for 100 or 1,500 or 1,600 yards.
Yeah. So that's why with the Heisman thing, with whether it's – Barkley should have gotten invited to that, but I don't think there was a true tailback this year that had the what can you do to stop this guy, and there was an answer for each one of those things.
Yeah.
Where obviously Northwestern found a way to stop Saquon Barkley. I think he had 75 total yards, and he's a kick returner.
To me, it was a two-man race. I think Bryce Love will get second, but I think it was Baker or Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, Lamar Jackson put up almost identical numbers to what he did the year before, and has hardly had any buzz whatsoever just because his team's not that good.
Right.
You know?
And because if you apples to apples, quarterback to quarterback, his numbers have been fantastic, but Baker's have been just as fantastic.
Yeah, and his team's better.
And his team's a lot better.
And, yeah.
And that's the other thing with that I really like Baker, and we can touch on this. I don't know how much time we have left in the segment. But
About 5 minutes or so.
We can go five minutes. So yeah. With one of the things that I really like about Baker Mayfield is that he's a teammate's guy, and he is going to do whatever he has to do to get the job done to win the game. And mm-hmm. I think that it's a misconstruing of a guy like Jeremiah George is the one that comes to mind, or Jaquez Washington.
Yeah.
Those are the two teammates that I had that remind me of Baker Mayfield, where Jeremiah George more so is if you challenged him in like what Kansas did with the not shaking the hands and like late hitting him, or like Georgia fans did by posting his cell phone number. You guys are just poking the bear.
Yeah.
But with like when you challenge him, he becomes better. And in that same competitiveness, like with Jeremiah would chirp to you in practice. Like he's on your team and he's like trying mm-hmm. to insult you because he wants you to talk back because it focuses him more. And Baker's the same way. And so in that competitiveness of like being a just aggressively like rude with a whole crotch grab thing, that happens. Like the amount of, you know, the FUs and that kind of stuff, that happens on the field all the time. A lot of times it's not on that high profile of a guy. So I know that guys like Jeremiah and Jaquez were in chirping just as much, but it just didn't get viewed.
Right.
But with Baker, I think in the same light of him doing anything he needs to for his team, like I think he completed in the title game 16 passes. Granted, four of them were touchdowns, but he only completed 16 passes because he didn't need to do more than that. Mm-hmm. Against Oklahoma State, he threw for 600 yards because they needed him to win.
Right.
So he will be whatever the team needs him to be to win the game. And I think that's the thing that I really like about him most. And I think the correlate for him is not Johnny Manziel. I think the correlate for him is a Russell Wilson, because it's the same competitiveness. It's just Russell Wilson is in a bow tie, where Baker Mayfield's in cutoff jeans and tank top. Like it's the same person, just with a different give off of the same thing. Russell Wilson's much more polished, but he's still got that same I'm going to absolutely murder you competitiveness.
Yeah.
And it's just a different delivery system for it.
I think that there's just not. This isn't one of those years where you can really argue it as much who's going to win.
Right.
I mean, Baker will probably win by a landslide. I wouldn't even be surprised if it was by a record margin.
Wasn't Tebow's the same way?
Yeah, it was similar to that. In that year that he won, I mean, clearly you knew that he was the best. You know, I mean, I think he was like the first guy to ever rush for 20 and for 20 touchdowns and pass for 20 touchdowns. So he was clearly the best player in college football. But I mean, getting back to what we were saying, Saquon Barkley was one of those guys that you turned on your TV to watch Penn State to see what Saquon Barkley was going to do.
Right.
You know, and it's like you think back to some of the other guys that have been that way. Reggie Bush.
Yep.
Obviously won. Vince Young got second. I think some people would maybe argue he should have won that year. I think that guys
like Christian McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey was one of those guys. There's just certain guys that you can list off that when you turned on their team, you were turning on to watch them as much as you were turning on to watch anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what made like Reggie Bush so crazy, is he had so many other good players on his team. But you're still, like, no, you I want to see what five. Reggie Bush does tonight.
Right. You wanted to watch number five. And so I'm glad that Baker Mayfield is a Big 12 guy, because it makes it a little easier for me to like mm-hmm. be out and out a homer for him, because if he played for Georgia playing against Oklahoma, the best thing to happen for Iowa State is for every bowl team, every Big 12 team to win. So no matter how much you dislike a team, it's you want them to win.
Yeah.
And so as much as I would like Baker no matter where he played, it's a lot easier because you can just root for him like out and out. Like I might even put an OU hat on for that Rose Bowl game.
I think OU's got a shot.
I think they
win
too,
the whole thing
because of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
That is expressly. If Baker Mayfield is out, there is no chance they get rolled up by 30 against Georgia. But because of Baker.
I don't know. Kyler Murray was supposed to be he was supposed to be better than any quarterback Iowa State had on their roster.
Crazy. Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Because of Baker's, he's going to do whatever he needs to do to get the win, get the job done. And I'm excited for that.
We'll be right back. You're listening to the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show presented by Agrigold on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. Welcome back. Segment 3 of the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show presented by Agrigold. Iowa State and Iowa set to tip off here in about 15 or 20 minutes. You're listening to this on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. Jared Stansberry, Jeff Woody, pre-recording the show tonight. I feel like I should keep reminding people that so that they don't think that we're not talking about Iowa State, Iowa, or anything. But it's we're pre-recording this. That's all I need to say.
And the energy is going to ramp up later. But also, can I say, side note, Lindell Wigginton and Cameron Lard
are very good.
Super fun to watch.
They're very good. I was I don't know if you read my preview for the game, but I was looking at some advanced statistics.
I have not. I really haven't a chance to read anything today.
Cameron Lard he scores like on 56% of the possessions that he's on the court.
Criminy.
Yeah. Which is, it's pretty small sample size because he's only played in four games. But still. It's pretty good.
And his defensive – and him and Solomon Young, like being able to rotate and have a true – like a true post
yeah.
that can play defense against another post player really entertaining.
Here's what I will say. I think that Cameron Lard is not that far off of what Jameel McKay was as like a junior.
Yeah.
And he's a redshirt freshman that's played four competitive games in 2.5 years.
And he's still – like, he is, I think Travis Hines said it the best. I think he tweeted this during the game, or during one of the games in Myrtle Beach. Cameron Lard will absolutely lead the team in technical fouls this year.
Oh, like, yeah, he's got some swag.
He's that energy, that straight-up fire.
Yeah.
Like, if you can direct that, and there's nobody that I would trust to do that more than Steve Prohm.
Right.
To direct that in one fashion, that guy is going to be scary. And to also recognize how spoiled we are I played football. I wrestled for my first part of high school and then didn't do anything in the winter. So I didn't play basketball. Understanding that, but how spoiled we are as Iowa State fans to have outside of two games, because Monte played in every game, correct? He played in every game when he was from the time he was a sophomore to the time he was a senior, correct?
Well, yeah. I think he started every game after halfway through his freshman year.
Right, so starting for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Like outside of two games, with the first two games of Wyler Babb not starting at point guard this year,
yeah,
we have had flawless point guard play
yeah.
for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And I think how spoiled we are to have that. And
Before that, it wasn't bad.
No.
Corey Lucius was a pretty good point guard.
It's just not this level of the assist to turnovers and making sure that everything is facilitated all the way through. And I think if you look towards the future with Wigginton, I feel like it's going to be the same thing with Prohm. And I think that was one – like I feel the success of this – the recent success, and again, they're very young. They still make a lot of really stupid mistakes. Like, you'll see a lot of turnovers that even me as an untrained basketball guy can go, why would you do that?
Yeah.
They still make a lot of those mistakes, but they're getting better. But I feel like the recent success of this, sort of, if you haven't fully eaten a crow for losing your mind after the loss at home to a bad team, in November, if you haven't eaten crow yet, you probably should just put it on your plate, because the amount of improvement this team has shown already in seven games is monumental to what they started with. And I think that's just a credit to relax.
They still got a ways to go.
They do.
I mean, they can't play the way they did in the first half on Monday against Northern Illinois. And a Big 12 team is going to run you out of the building if you play that way, whereas Northern Illinois will only be up by two. You know?
Right.
And so they have to figure out how to play the way they played in that second half for the whole game. But if they can do that, they're going
to
win some basketball
games.
But I think
they still have to figure out the front court rotation. Like, who's playing with
who? Oh, yeah.
And so at some point, I would think that Lard and Young are going to be on the floor at the same time, and you get Braze in there, somebody, and then two guards, and then you're going to rotate orders. So they're going to at some point find a rotation in the front court that's going to work. But at this point, it's still trying to put, like, there's one black glove on your right hand, and you know that one fits, and there's like nine black gloves for your left hand laid out on the table, and you have to keep trying which one works.
Yeah.
So there's going to be an experimental, like, is this successful or not successful?
That was a heck of an analogy. I'm just going to say
match?
That. Yeah.
Is that right?
That's a nice analogy.
So
yeah.
Do these things match? Do they play together? And so at some point they're going to figure out that front court rotation is
right.
They just don't know exactly what that is. And I think Iowa, as even though they're as super inconsistent as they have been, they're still a talented roster.
Yeah.
That if they, like, there's nothing like rivalry games to pop you out of a slump. So Iowa still has the potential to be a really tough game. So I'm excited as this season goes on that one thing that in the 2 years that Prohm has been here that I'm excited for the most is that you can't say that the March team is anywhere close to the level that the November team was. They're always leaps and bounds better than where they started. And I'm right. excited to see how high this team goes because there's so much more talent than I think people are giving it credit for. Because a guy like Jacoby Long, a guy like Terrence Lewis, those dudes can flat out score
yeah.
when they're in the right spot. And so getting those guys to understand where the right spot is, I'm as a fan, really like patiently excited to see where everything goes. And tonight's a good example of it.
Tonight's going to be interesting. This Iowa roster.
I was going to say, what do you think about this? You make much more basketball sense than football guy does.
This Iowa roster presents some interesting challenges. They have 10 guys that are 6'7 or taller.
How many does Iowa State have? 4?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, they only have 8 players in general. So, you know, because Zoran Talley's not going to play for an indefinite amount of time.
So he has a stress fracture? Is that what
stress fracture in his left foot. We don't know if Jacoby Long will play, at least when we're recording this.
Correct.
We don't. Yeah, he had a concussion. Still battling back from that. But so it's going to create some interesting scenarios for Iowa State defensively. Because, you obviously assume that either Donovan or Lindell will guard Jordan Bohannon.
Mm-hmm.
And then whichever one of them does not guard him will guard Isaiah Moss, who is 6'5 already.
Right, which is a height deficit for whomever that person
yeah,
is.
Yeah, because both of them are 6'2".
And then Babb would then guard the 3.
Which I would assume would probably be Nick Bear.
Who's 6'7", right?
6'7". And Iowa has changed their starting lineup a lot.
And even didn't Fran hint this at the beginning of this week that he might
change
the starting lineup again?
But then you've got Nunji and Garza and Tyler Cook.
Garza's the stud, isn't he? I can't remember.
Garza and Nunji are both freshmen.
Okay.
Cook is the sophomore.
The very talented young guys. That's what I was
saying. Yeah, they're both pretty good.
Okay.
But both of them, I believe, are 6'11". And okay. then Tyler Cook is like 6'9 or 6'10".
And so Iowa State's height comes with Braze being 6'8 or so.
Yeah, 6'7", 6'8".
And then Young and Lard are Iowa State's essentially biggest big men.
And then Jeff Beverly.
Right, and Beverly, who's 6'9", correct? 6'8"?
He's like 6'5".
6'5"? Okay, yeah. He's the bigger small guy, the Dustin Hoge.
Yeah, but he's smaller than Dustin Hoge.
The big small guy.
Yeah, and not near as freakishly athletic as Dustin Hoge was.
Or Deontay Burton. Neither of those athletes.
He's just going to be your muscle guy. You hope that he can just beat up on some of
those. Your big, small guy.
Yeah. But that's not the point.
Your small, big guy.
Yeah. The point is that Iowa has guys that are really big, but I think the thing that bodes well for Iowa State is they also are not overly mobile.
Right.
Compared to like a Cameron Lard. Or Solomon Young.
And even a Solomon Young, and again, not a basketball guy, one thing that I really like, I just sometimes just will, on an offensive possession, is just watch Solomon Young.
Yeah.
He scores 4 points a game, but he might be the guy that moves the most on the offensive side. It's because he's dragging a post, or he's dragging whoever's defending him around, and he's helping set the offense up, and he's a pretty decent passer from my untrained eye.
Well, and he does, and he sets a lot of screens.
And he's moving around all over the place and just making the other guy tired.
Watch Cameron Lard tonight. Not as much on half-court situations, but when they grab a rebound and push, watch the way he runs the floor.
Is he a shot out of a cannon?
Yes. And he is really good at running rim to rim, which is one of the most important things that a 5-man can do in basketball. He's as good at that right now as any guy that Iowa State's had in a while.
As Jameel McKay.
It took Jameel a while, once Prohm got here, to really buy into doing the rim-to-rim thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do that, you can be a really good transition basketball team because that guy puts a lot of pressure on the defense.
Especially if you're dragging a 6'11 guy.
And it not only opens up stuff for him, he can get easy baskets. He's gotten easy baskets already out of it this year.
He is the dunk guy.
But that opens up lanes for guys like Lindell and Donovan to attack the rim, and that's how you end up with an offense like they scored 52 points in the second half on Monday.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think a lot of that rim running is causing these open looks for you have 3 to 3.5, depending on how hot Braze is.
Yeah.
You have 3.5 dead eye shooters with Babb, Jackson, and Wigginton. And if that rim running is forcing that, because the opposing team's 5 is dragging an anchor to try and keep up with Lard, it means another guy's going to have to help off. And then all of a sudden, Wigginton's out standing in the corner, or Babb standing at the elbow or something, or elbow extended.
Exactly.
And somebody's there for an open 3. And that is, I think, like I said, I think that's the thing I'm excited for the most is getting guys to understand how to do that. Because I think Terrence Lewis is he's 6'6", right?
Yeah, 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah. He's probably going to be something, I would think, because the guards they have, once him and Long are both about the same height and same skill set-ish, Long 6'5"-ish, right?
Yeah, he's like 6'5", 6'6".
So they're going to probably play in that four mold. So if they're also in
I think that Terrence like a three, honestly. He's well, like a three, a small four.
Either way, I think the ability to have Lard be the rim runner, and then you have Lewis or Long, once they're healthy and functioning and in the flow of this offense, to be another guy who can be
a shooter
and spaced and dragging a 6'11", you know, guys like Purdue had last year as the two giant guys they had to force them to, like I said, pulling an anchor. You're dragging them up and down down the floor. And that's, like, I'm excited to see what that matchup looks like down the rest of the season as well as tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Cameron Lard, I called him the X Factor in what I wrote just because I think that if he can get those guys into a little bit of trouble defensively, then it's going to open up everything for those other guys.
He also needs to not take really stupid fouls.
Yeah, he's averaging like 7 fouls per 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That's why he can't start, because he can't stay out of foul trouble.
Because he's super aggressive.
Yeah. Which is what I'd rather see a young big guy be super aggressive than be super passive.
Yeah. Which is, and
you can tell a guy to dial it back a lot easier than you can tell a guy to put it full throttle.
I saw a photo of Cam Lard, I think Matt Schultz, the SID for basketball.
Yeah, the shot that he blocked nearly killed Travis Hines with.
His arm is above the square.
Did you see the video of Mo Bamba?
His hand is above the square as he's blocking that shot, which is like 13 feet off the ground.
Did you see the video of Mo Bamba from their game on Monday?
That wasn't fair.
Yeah. Like I said, it looked like a creative player on 2K.
That's not fair.
All right, man. Thanks for joining me today on the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, for sure. Turn it over to 100.3 The Buzz.
After tweeting at Chris M. Williams and telling him to pay for my trip down to Memphis, but it's your idea. It's your idea to say, hey, this would be a great idea. We would love content from Jeff in Memphis. That is what the assignment is.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks again to Agrigold for being the presenting sponsor of the Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show tonight. You've been listening to CF Radio on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.